Hi, I'm Libby Fulton.
And I'm Grant Greenfell.
And we like to garden.
We like to garden. We like to garden. We like to garden. We like to garden.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We Like to Garden. I am here with Libby, as always, and we have a really special guest this week. We have Jenny joining us from Cornwall Pocket Farms. Jenny, welcome.
Thank you. Hello. Hi.
It's so nice to be talking to you. And for people who aren't familiar with you, we did tease in our episode last time that we were going to be interviewing you. So we sent people onto your YouTube channel.
Oh, brilliant.
So hopefully people have read a little bit or watched a video or two.
Awesome.
But for those who haven't, do you want to just share with us about Cornwall Pocket Farm, your garden, and a little bit about your gardening journey?
Sure, sure. Well, it started just about coming up 3 years old now. So originally it started off because I started to get really sort of concerned and stressed about climate change and the state of the environment and biodiversity loss and all that sort of thing. And I was just sort of thinking, like, what can I do? You know, so I thought, well, I looked at sort of the impacts that we have as humans. You know, every day we've got like water, waste, energy and all that sort of stuff. And then we've also got like our food, transport, and then consumption, you know, buying stuff. And so we decided that we were going to sort of completely change what we were doing. And so we bought a little house in suburbia in Onehunga, and we basically did a sort of a big retrofit on it, like masses of insulation and low energy fittings, and made it really water and energy efficient, rainwater catch and all that sort of stuff. And the whole plan as well was to basically get a bit of garden, really, so that we could grow our own fruit and veg, and then obviously cut out all those sort of, you know, food miles and chemicals and all those sort of impacts that industrial agriculture has. So that was the sort of the beginning of where we started. We did the full renovation and moved in, and this was just soil from one end to the other. We had a tree, a fig tree, which I'd had to chop down really seriously to sort of get some other stuff out. And that was sort of the beginning, really. So it was really about reducing our impact and trying to live as sort of sustainably as we could. So that's where this garden started. So I'm not an expert gardener at all. I mean, I've learned everything that I know off YouTube.
So, yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah. So if I want to try and do something, I just go and sort of look on YouTube, really, and then figure it out. So, yeah, I don't have like a long history of gardening excellence or anything like that. I just sort of thought, no, that's a good idea. I'll crack on and give it a shot.
Wow. So have you been only gardening since you had this property, or is it a bit of a longer kind of journey?
Yeah, no, we were in an apartment before this, an apartment in the city. So I've sort of dabbled like most people. So I've sort of, when the kids were little, you know, I'd go and buy the six packs from Bunnings and sort of pansies and put them in to sort of make them look pretty. And, you know, I've sort of grown the odd tomato plant, but nothing on this scale. I mean, I'd not sown seeds or done anything like that before I started this. So it was, it's quite a massive learning curve. And I when we bought this place,
it's so inspiring, Jenny.
Thank you.
It is, yeah.
So when we bought this place, we were in this apartment in town, and I just literally through the renovation, I spent a year just binge watching gardening YouTube videos to figure out what to do, and garden design videos and all sorts, just figuring out how to do it, really. And then I just sort of set about it.
Wow, you would never know that you were also a beginner gardener, like us, judging by your YouTube videos. You come across very knowledgeable. Like I've been watching thinking I need to watch with a notebook and take down notes.
But you'll notice in every one I say things like, this is what I'm doing. There's no way I would tell anybody what they're supposed to do. I'm not coming from a place of knowledge at all. I'm actually just thinking, well, I'll just show everybody what I'm doing. And then if it fails, at least they'll see how and why at the same time as I am. So I just make it up as I go along, really.
And how did you plan out the garden? So when you first had your kind of bare patch of dirt, how did you go about that whole process?
Yeah, that was yeah. I probably didn't go about it the right way. I suppose I just, to start with, I thought about what I wanted to eat, really. That was the starting point. What do I want to eat? And then how am I going to grow those things? So then I sort of figured out how you grow those things and what environments they need and things. And then I have a design background, not garden design, but a design. So when I did the house, I designed the house. And then from that, I designed the garden at the same time. So I just drew up the garden on a piece of paper with the house plans and everything. And I had basically the fence, the house, and this fig tree, this one fig tree we had. And I measured everything off that. So when I started laying out the garden, we just basically just picked off little bits at a time. And I measured everything off those reference points. So, for instance, I put in the we've got a little brick circle in the middle of our kitchen garden. And I put that brick circle down really, really early on before we had heaps of other stuff. And really just because I was fed up of moving the pile of bricks around the place. Because every time I needed to do something, it was right where the bricks were. So I thought, I'll just put them where they're supposed to be. And I just measured it off those waypoints. And then that was that, really.
It's so funny the way things work out sometimes, isn't it?
For our listeners, can you say exactly how big your garden is? Because it's amazing what you have managed to pack into it.
Yeah, so it's about 300 square meters, and the house obviously takes up about 100 square meters of that. So, and all of our garden is at the front because this used to be a bigger section and then it was subdivided and there are two houses to the back of us. So at the back of our house, we literally have less than a meter that runs the whole length of the back. And then all our garden is in the front. But that works quite well because the back is shaded anyway. And so all the front garden is all in really good sort of north orientation. So that's great. We've got some good sun there. So it's not very big. And that's, I think doing it, planning it from above early on was the key thing, actually, because I sort of laid it all out. And it's amazing how much more you can get in when you just look at it from above. And also I was looking from a bird's eye view. So if, you know, I was sort of looking at foliage cover, if you like. So I put in we've got a pergola along the front and we're growing grapes along there, and that was all foliage. And then I was sort of doing it from a bird's eye view. It just made it a lot easier to pack in a lot more stuff. I think if I'd stood in the garden, I would have gone, oh, it's just too small, and I wouldn't be able to work out where things needed to go. So it's certainly, and I just sort of thought, well, that tree is going to be about 3 meters across. So I drew a circle and then just fitted in like that. It was like Lego blocks, really.
So, and you have so many trees in your garden, don't you? How many do you have?
I think we've got about 26.
So many.
It's just that last counting. So cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 26. Yeah. So
incredible.
My house is exactly the same size as yours. It's like a different, it's a bit longer and narrower than I think yours is, judging from your videos. But it is so inspiring to me because I've put 3 trees in since I've moved in.
Right.
And like, I'm already thinking like, oh, there's no room for any more, but there definitely is.
definitely. Yeah.
Because and you grow yours, you grow some espalier and some step over. Can you just tell us how you, especially the step over ones? I really want to do some step overs and espaliers. I love them, but I don't have any idea how to kind of achieve them.
No, neither did I before I watched the YouTube videos. But it's quite easy. But the hardest thing is actually when you order the trees, because we did invest in the trees, the fruit trees, and a couple of shrubs as well. But the rest of the garden we've done pretty much on a shoestring because we've got no money left by the time we've done the renovation. But we did invest in these trees. So we got these bare root trees came along. And the first thing you have to do is basically chop them off really low. So obviously you need to be careful where the graft is because most fruit trees have at least one graft. And pear trees often will have 2 grafts, I found out. So with the pear tree, they'll have a low graft and then they have this little bit that they put in the middle and then the fruit making stuff is on the top of that. But most trees, like apple trees, they have 1 graft. So figure out where the graft is. And then you literally just chop it off sort of, quite low, just, you know, yeah, mid-thigh level I did mine. So you get this beautiful tree that comes and you just chop it off and then hope you haven't killed it, really. That was a bit of a – like, the builders were here when the trees arrived and they said, what have you done to your trees? And they thought I was mad. I just chopped the top off. I was like, oh, I hope they grow back. But they did. They did grow back. So you chop them off and that essentially where you chop it off, that's the, then what will happen is you'll get new branches come out at that point. So you sort of keep one to go left, one to go right and one to carry on up. And then when you get to the height, you want the next one to separate and have the next tier. Again, you chop it off. So and then you have to be really mean and not really let it grow anything else. So when it gets a little branch coming out, I'll chop it back to three leaves. And so you're essentially – it's a little bit like doing a bonsai. You know, that's really extreme pruning. So – basically, you just do it like that. But they're doing fabulously. And apparently, they live a lot longer and they produce a lot more fruit that way. So that's
– they can concentrate on the fruit on, you know, the limited space that they have.
That's right. And so I've done some all the way down the path as a sort of a sort of a hedge type feature almost. So I've got four fruit trees in this espaliered hedge. And then the step overs I'm putting at the back of two of my kitchen garden beds, and they're just essentially an espalier, but you only let it have one tier. You don't let it come up, so it's really just very small. And when you see them on a lot of the really what are they like? They sort of stately home type gardens. When they put them around vegetable gardens, they have them really, really low. So they're only like a foot off the ground. Some of these things that they have, and they have full size pears on, but they're just like tiny little borders. Mine's higher than that. I've let mine to be about again, I think it's about knee height. But then, yeah, that's just going to go along the back of the borders. So I've got lots of different sorts of fruit trees, but none of them are really going to grow very big. Even the ones that I call sort of full size, if you like, they only have a certain space to be in because of it's all quite constricted. So they can only they're only allowed to get as high as me on a short step ladder with loppers. So anything above that height gets chopped off. So I also grow some in pots as well. So again, that's like a bonsai. If it's in a pot, it won't grow very big anyway. You just keep it trimmed quite small. And then the other thing I've done is I've done a family planting of avocados, and that was quite interesting. Basically I've got just over a meter square, and I've got four full size avocado plant trees in there of different varieties. So they all pollinate each other, because the problem with avocados apparently is they don't pollinate very easily, whereas growing them all together, all the branches intertwine. So basically the bees don't know where it's landing and what it's doing. So they're just being pollinated all the time. And the idea is that I should have avocados most of the year round.
So clean. Yum.
So, yeah. So that again, I found online. So yeah, so I basically try some stuff and see what works. Mostly it seems to be doing quite well. So yeah.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. I wish we could grow avocados down here.
When you see your espalier hedges, it's so different from usually. I've only seen them against walls or fences, but it makes such a great like use of space and screen without to be able to segment your garden areas, but at the same time be functional. So did you spend a lot of time researching the varieties of the fruit trees to make sure that they would be like good fruiters, but they're also good for espalier, and that they weren't going to be the mature size. They didn't mind not 3D maturation of like a really large fruit tree, I should say.
Yeah. Yes, I did. I was looking at fruit trees. I wanted to try and get a spread of fruit trees. So I've got how many apples now? One, two. Right. I've got a double grafted tree, which is a normal size tree, but I'll keep it as a small tree. And that's a double grafted Peas Good Nonsuch and Monty's Surprise. And they're really large cooking type apples. That's sort of in the chicken.
Did you buy it grafted? Yeah. You graft it?
No, I bought them grafted. So I've got a double grafted there, and I've got a double grafted plum as well, which helps the pollination as well. But they graft them on the same tree. And then what was? Oh, yes, that's right. So I've lost the question in my head then. So when I looked at all the apples, I was looking at when they fruited. So I was trying to have an early apple and a later apple and a cooking apple and an eating apple and and those types of things, as well as sort of the types of apples that we like. So, and pears as well. And I also tried to diversify in the types of fruit that I've got, because obviously things are getting wetter and warmer and windier or whatever, all these things. So I've sort of got some apples and pears in because they espalier quite well. But by the same token, they're not really warm weather plants. So I've also got in like a banana and citrus and things that are warmer weather. I've got a quince tree as well. So I've got a range of different things. The bananas are a dwarf Cavendish. So they're like the ones you get in the bananas are the ones you get in the supermarket, but the plants themselves are dwarf. So they shouldn't really get much taller than they are at the moment. And they're not that big. If you look on the YouTube videos, they're not that tall. And because I've got that small space, and I wanted something, I thought, oh, I've got plenty of airspace, I can go much taller than that. And when I spoke to the suppliers about it, they said, well, yeah, but you've got to remember that tall plants, the way they can stand up is they have big roots. So if you have a tall banana, the roots need a big spread, and I didn't have a big spread. So I thought, okay, I'll do dwarf, and dwarf bananas can actually grow in a pot. So yeah, that's how I made that work. But yeah, I've tried to have a whole range of different fruits so that we have fruit that's happening amazing all the year round.
And the same with your veggies. I talked in our last episode about your planting schedule spreadsheet video, which just absolutely blew both of us away. I need to rewatch it with a notebook.
I
believe it.
Yeah.
Amazing. People need to go and watch it.
They 100% do. And at the end, Jenny, like, I was watching along and I was like, okay, I get it. And there was so much information. And then I had this aha moment when you said which hopefully you explained to our listeners, but she was able to change how you viewed in the sorting of your different columns so that you could basically search and tell what you had done either by a plant, by a sowing date, by when you wanted to pick them. And that really, to me, I was like, wow, that makes such a useful way of organizing it without it just being your gardening plan. Like, I couldn't believe it. My mind was blown at the end of that.
Obviously I've sort of worked in the corporate environment for quite a long time. And so, for me, Excel spreadsheets, or these are Google Sheets is what I use because it's free. But, doing that sort of stuff is great. And I'm actually really looking forward to the winter where I can play and make graphs and make pretty pictures and do some analysis, Which sounds a bit mad, isn't it? But yeah, I do like a good Excel spreadsheet.
Oh, it actually works.
Yeah. But it does help. I mean, as I said in that video, I showed how I'd done it in the past, and I kept trying different ways. I was spending more time maintaining the sort of records than I was actually doing the garden. And then the other thing I found was that I was actually using it to record what I was doing rather than planning. So this new system that I've got now, it works really well for planning. And then when I go out and I sow seeds and things, I don't even need to think about it. I just do what it tells me to do because I've done all that work before. So that works really well. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's something probably a lot of people struggle with, is that you kind of record things as you're doing them, and then with a view to like I do it with a view that, oh, next year I can look back and see that this is when I sowed my tomatoes or whatever, but it's not actually that helpful for planning.
Yeah.
And you also, I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how you plant your vegetable beds and how you do your guilds, because that also really blew me away, and I have never heard someone describe it like that before, and I am so on board.
It was just trial and error.
Because it was such an easy concept.
I mean, that one of the things about not really having any background in gardening is you don't really know the right way to do it. So I started off thinking, right, I need a big row, a big row of cabbages or a big row of leeks or whatever, and I did those. And then The problem was everything happened at the same time, and then there's only two of us. And even if I get in some, you know, recruit some neighbors and things, that's like an awful lot of cabbage, and it's already at the same time. So, yeah, that was sort of not working. And then I just started to, you know, I'd have things left over, and then I'd bung it in a different bed. And then I thought, oh, this works really well, actually, because then, you know, I've got one coming up here and one coming up there. So, yeah, I just transitioned to basically having my beds have all this sort of lots of different things planted in them. So I sort of start off with the sort of the hero vegetable in that bed. So it might be tomatoes, or it might be, courgettes or something like that, and I know that that's what I'm going to plant in that bed. And then I put some other things from different families in there as well, because I also found out a lot about the idea that a lot of science here, but basically the soil has a lot of life, and a lot of the way the plants grow healthily and grow really well is by having a very strong biome underneath. So all the little organisms and the soil and everything and all the fungi and everything, that helps the plants grow. So if you have soil that is really, really has nothing much going on in it, and you give it, you plant cabbages all through that bed, imagine all those organisms under the soil, they're just eating cabbages, and that's not enough for them, and they don't work very well, and then they don't feed the plants very well. So it works better if you have lots of different food sources for these animals in the soil and the fungi and everything that then help the plants grow. So that was sort of the science behind it. And I thought, well, if I put lots of different plants in, different vegetables and also flowers for pollinators, if I put all of those in the beds, then it's more difficult for pests to find a particular crop and then decimate that crop. It's better for the soil life. Mm-hmm. And the, excuse me, the soil life is really important, because the soil actually captures a lot of carbon out of the atmosphere. So healthy soil life is really good for the environment. And the plants actually feed the soil life. So they take the energy from the sun, they photosynthesize, and then they sort of exude out of their roots this food, which then the organisms in the soil use to live. And then it's a symbiotic relationship. They then plant feed the plants back. So if I just plant lots of different types of vegetables, it means that I have lots of different sorts of vegetables to eat, and also the soil life has lots of different types of vegetables to eat, and everybody's happy.
It's such a good way of looking at it, and it's not the traditional way of doing a veggie garden with the neat little rows of all the veggies, but I think a lot of more people are kind of embracing that biodiversity in their veggie beds.
The key thing for me is that rather than it just being completely random, it works better if it's like a pattern. So if you have like, for instance, rocket spinach, and then sort of next to that, tomato, pepper, you know, so you've actually got a system, so you know where things are. It might look a bit random, but it's actually not, because you know what's in each row.
It's a really good way to do it.
I really liked your no-dig concept with it, how you would underplant some of the mature plants that had almost gone to seed with putting in fresh seedlings. And you tend to, your method was just cutting the plants off if you weren't going to leave them to flower and set seed. Is that correct?
Yeah, and so absolutely.
That again enhances that soil cycle.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of videos on this on YouTube, but basically, rather than, you know, the no dig, I mean, Charles Dowding, he's the, you know, the king of no dig. I mean, you've got to watch his videos if you haven't. They're brilliant. But yeah, basically, you just don't disturb the soil, because whenever you sort of disturb the soil, you're disturbing all that life underneath. So essentially, you just chop everything off at soil level, and then what the organic matter that's now the roots and everything that's in the ground, they just become compost in situ. So, and it also protects plants. If you think about nature, the way that things are growing up, you know, they're generally the young seedlings come up amongst other plants as well. So, and I quite often will leave things just to flower and go to seed as well. So at the moment we've got some mizuna that's all gone to seed, and we've got greenfinches just mobbing it every day, because that's what they eat, the seeds. So it's really nice, because obviously what I'm doing is gardening for nature as well as gardening for me. So I'm sort of thinking about it. It's food for everybody, the bugs, the bees, the birds, me as well. So sometimes, you know, if I don't get something to eat out of that, I think, well, there you go. At least something else is eaten. So I'm just part of that ecosystem, and all those other things are part of that ecosystem too.
With your garden, because it's a smaller space, and you use absolutely every single area of your garden. When you were planning out your garden, how did you approach those kind of smaller areas, like down the sides of the house, or how did you kind of deal with those?
Yeah, it was really, again, coming back to that, what do I want to eat and where would it best go? So when I looked at things like berries, blackberries and raspberries and things like that, they don't like full sun. You know, they like a bit of sort of bit more shade than that. And they're also quite a bramble type of plant. So I thought, oh, well, I could pop that round the side. The other thing is we found around the side towards the back of the house, when they did the subdivision, they'd basically used that as a bit of a sort of a dumping ground for some rubble and things. So the soil wasn't great down there. So I thought, okay, that's going to be perfect to put in a what I call a little meadowlet, basically, which is basically towards the back of that side garden. It gets wilder and wilder and wilder. And I've got my bug hotels back there, and I've got wildflowers. And, you know, that's where all the brambles, the raspberries and currants and things are around back there, because they're not very tidy looking plants. They can all be quite messy. And then I wanted a wildlife pond as well. And so that made sense to go around there, because, again, it needs a bit of light, but not all that much light. And whereas my kitchen garden needed full sun. And so actually when I started to think what everything needed and I started to move things around, it sort of made sense what should go down the side. And then I tried to cluster all my services down the other side. So I've got one area of my garden, which I call my service area, which is, you know, it's got the washing line and I've got a 4,000 litre rainwater tank, which collects the water off the roof. And it also feeds my toilets, flushes the toilets. Wow. And I use it to irrigate the kitchen garden. So it's only my kitchen garden that's irrigated. Everything else just looks after itself pretty much. So I have the rainwater tank, the pump, all the dust bins, all of that. I've tried to cluster all that together down that one side, which has allowed the rest of the room to be used for things. I mean, we also have this double carport. Well, it was a sort of double carport stroke garage when we bought the place, but we don't have a car. So we always knew that we wanted to sort of we took the carport down essentially and used all the wood and materials from that to build the chicken coop and other structures and things around the garden. So that space is a concrete pad. And I think what I'm going to try, we haven't got there yet, but what I'd like to do is put a greenhouse on there and then a sort of a nice sort of maybe a sitting area or something like that. So there's still lots to do in the garden.
Yeah. And speaking of reusing that material, I know that you did as much as you could kind of on a shoestring budget.
Yeah.
What are all of your kind of your tips and tricks for doing things?
Oh, well, wow. Yeah. I think for me, it's just like creativity, really. If I want to try and do something, I have to figure out how I'm going to do it. So when we moved in, the garden was on a slope. It was basically sloping away from the sun. And obviously, that wasn't going to be very good for the annual vegetable garden, you know, the kitchen garden. So we needed to sort of do some sort of retaining wall. And I'd seen on YouTube this thing called an urbanite wall, which was, I thought, oh, wow, that's so cool. Because this place, when we bought it, it was like a little patch of grass, this huge double carport, lots of concrete paths, and then three enormous, the biggest cypress trees you've ever seen in your life. I mean, they were about four plus meters across. Oh. They were enormous. So the garden looked quite small to start with, but obviously, when I looked at the plan, I thought, oh, no, there's a reasonable size there. I would have liked more, but like, we couldn't afford more, so this is the size we had. But anyway, I thought, well, when I saw this urbanite wall, I thought it was brilliant, because basically you just use the old concrete in the past. We just broke it. I say we. I directed my husband. Broke up this concrete with a sledgehammer. And I helped him move bits about, you know. But anyway, yeah. So, and then you used all this broken concrete and did a sort of a dry stone wall type retaining wall. And it looks really, really lovely. I'm so pleased with it. So that was amazing. Completely free, just recycling what we had there. all the structures in the garden are basically made out of the old framing from inside the house. This is a 1950s house, so all the inside framing was Rimu. It was really nice, solid Rimu. So rather than dumping all of that, which would have obviously, you know, all the waste, it was a bad idea anyway, but it was really good resource. So we kept all that on this carport that we didn't use, and we've used it to make structures. So, and I say the carport itself made the chicken coop and the washstand in the garden and those types of things. And then at the moment, I'm just building with my daughter a sort of a bin hide, like a little garage for the bins, so you don't see the bins much. And that I just got some wood off the side of the road. So it's quite handy having a little dog, because I walk my dog around the neighborhood and I go, pile of wood there, or is it handy little skip with the resources there? Or, so I've got my strawberry planter. My new strawberry planter is an old wheelbarrow that was somebody put out in the last inorganic collection. And I thought, oh, that's perfect. So wheeled it home, drilled some holes, and now it's got strawberries in it. So yeah, I just make the use of what I can find. Perfect. Really,
that's really good. I guess it's about keeping your mind open to the possibilities of keeping an eye out for things.
That's right. And I think the neighbors know that we're scroungers, really. So they, when they're chucking something out, they say, "We're gonna put this on the side of the road, do you want it?" And I'm like, yeah, we'll have it, thanks.
and the more you keep collecting, the more inventive you become.
It just
escalates, doesn't it? And
that's true. Yes. But I love a good resource, you know.
And I love seeing your hens in the video, and this is the thing that keep blowing my mind watching your videos, was space isn't a limitation. You literally have been able to fill all sustainable dreams in your 300 square meters.
So. Yeah.
The chickens, I thought, were fabulous. Are they Orpingtons or what?
Yeah. Well, they're Australorps. So we've got two Australorps, and then we've got two Plymouth Barred Rocks as well. Yeah. So yeah, the Australorps are amazing. Really like those. The Plymouth Barred Rocks can be a bit fussy. They keep going broody. So we're not as big a fan of those. I would definitely recommend an Australorp though. They're great. We have all our own eggs, and we basically pretty much feed ourselves out of the garden. Yeah. So, I mean, that was another thing we did when we came here. We went vegetarian as well. We just get all the fresh veg, and that's what we eat. I mean, we don't buy any fresh veg from the supermarket, and hopefully we won't buy fruit. But at the moment, the trees are quite young, so they need to sort of grow a bit before we're getting fruit from them.
Over winter, how much food did you grow? I guess you've got quite mild, a lot more mild than we have maybe winters. But yeah, what kinds of things do you grow in winter, and do you use all of your beds in winter? Or because I know that you've got that sun video where the sun is at the winter solstice in your garden, which I thought was just a really good exercise for people to do.
The most boring video in the world, but I thought it would be really helpful for me. I thought it was
quite interesting.
Yeah, so Jenny has a video up on her YouTube, which
there was one Greer talked to me about, and I loved it.
Yes, I did. And she went around her garden at 9 a.m. and to see where the sun was at midday, and then again at, what was it, like 3 p.m. or something like that? And I was like, I need to do this in my garden at the winter solstice, because I would never ever have thought of it, and it would be so useful.
Yeah, well, that basically made me find some extra spaces. So I realized that I've got really great sun against the house in winter. Mm. And so I'm thinking, I should get some planters in there to extend my growing space underneath the pergola. Obviously, in the summer, we have shade there, but in the winter, it's full sun. The other thing was that I noticed that I've actually just installed some hanging baskets now, because that's in the sun on the back beds in the winter. So, yeah. Yes. So things like that, finding extra space, that was quite useful. But because it's all a front garden, we have a fence at the front of the property. Obviously, it was like that when we moved in. And we toyed with sort of taking it lower, but it is our front garden. You know, that's all our outdoor spaces in our front garden, and it's sort of our privacy, so we wanted to keep that there. But what that does mean is that two of my beds in the kitchen garden are in full shade in the winter. So I thought, oh, I can't really grow anything there. But again, I thought, oh, I'll just bung some stuff in. So I did. And actually, I was surprised how well things grew. Some things didn't, but some things did well. So certainly some spinach and broccoli, some kale, Cavolo Nero, that actually worked quite well and grew quite well there. It wasn't as bushy and as healthy. It wasn't as big as the stuff on my two front beds, which get the sun all winter long. But yeah, something still grew there. So that was a useful exercise. But yeah, we grow, even in the winter, we were eating everything out of our garden fine. So yeah, we have broccoli and carrots and leeks and kale, all sorts of bits and pieces, really. I mean, yeah, but enough to feed us in the winter, yeah.
That's really incredible. And it's inspired me. So I'm like you. I have a fence that shades two of my veggie beds. And it has, and I just put mustard in as a green crop over winter. And I just thought I couldn't grow anything in them. But it's really inspired me. I'm definitely going to grow stuff next winter in them.
The other thing that we did actually have this stupid summer purple sprouting broccoli. It said on the packet that it should mature in 120 days. Well, it's just sprouted now. And that was, I planted it last spring. So it was not 120 days. But one of the things that did happen, I know it just, and I said, look, you are not coming out until you sprout. So it just got taller and taller and taller. And it was quite good because we just kept taking the leaves for the chickens and they love it. So that was good. But that was a tip that I found, that if you plant something early and it keeps growing, tall things, they're still in the sun. So when ground level was in the shade, the things that I planted early and would had grown up were still in the sun. So I think that was something else I might try next year as well, is start something early and plant something that's taller.
Yeah, that is a really good tip. Do you have any other kind of hot tips of things just off the top of your head?
Oh, golly. I know. Just be creative and have fun. I mean, for me, you know, I mean – When we painted the fence, I was like, it was this horrible dark green color. And I said, oh, let's do it a light blue. And we thought, oh, and the neighborhood might not be ready for a light blue fence on the outside. So I said, well, we'll paint the outside of the fence a different color. And my husband said, oh, you can't paint it different colors on different sides. And I said, why not? So we did. And it worked out fine. So it's pale blue on the outside and navy. So pale blue on the inside and navy on the outside. But yeah, I just like to have fun with it. So we've got like an old recycle window that I found off the side of the road, and we had a lot of wind that comes across our garden, which we didn't realize we were going to have until we moved in, but it's really quite a strong wind, and everything was really getting buffeted, so we needed to make sort of things to slow the wind down and sort of break it up across the garden. And so we sort of ended up making a bit of a trellis fence out of the old rimu out of the house. And then also we put this window in there. So we have an outdoor window, and which is nice. I think it's really cool. But, you know, I think if you think of your garden as fun, what's the worst that can happen? I mean, it's a garden. It's not like you're building your own house or anything. I mean, it's a garden. If you don't like it, you can change it. So I just try things, really, and have a bit of a giggle with it.
That's an awesome attitude.
That's really good.
Yeah.
And what is on your to-do list for the next couple of weeks?
We're talking about having fun. I'm actually just making a marquee, a mesh marquee, because we have this gazebo with a ripped cover, and I'm repurposing it for the garden to make a sort of a walk-in mesh house. So I've got a bunch of the EnviroMesh stuff from Mitre 10, and it's very good value because it's really, really wide. And I've made this big tent. So it's been like sewing a really cheap wedding dress, really, because there's just, it's like all this sort of net and fluff everywhere. But I'm pretty much there. So that's the next thing, is to do that, to sort of keep off some of the pests that I don't want to eat my summer crops. So I'm going to have a mesh house. So that's what I'm finishing off at the moment. We've got the bin hide, which I'm also finishing, and we're building a kumara planter on the top, because again, you know, I might as well grow something on top of my bin hide. It's extra space and there's sunlight there, so why not? Mm. And then, of course, it's just sowing seeds and planting, and it's pretty busy at this time of year, trying to get everything in and going, yeah.
Yeah, it is pretty busy this time of year. Are you planning on growing anything that's new to you this season?
Yeah, I'm trying a rumbacante, I think it's called. It's it's an Italian climbing courgette. So last year I put in a couple of loofahs and they went absolutely bonkers. I thought I'd just grow a couple of sponges for the kitchen, you know, to put a sink or whatever. Mm. We ended up with 24 loofahs. So I have got so many loofahs. I'm never going to need to grow them again. But they, as a plant, it was beautiful. It was so healthy. It completely covered the whole sort of central structure, which we call Crystal Palace. We have very fancy names for all the structures in our garden, just because, again, it's just a bit of a, you know, why not? Why not call your arch marble arch? I mean, you might as well. You've got to call it something. So Crystal Palace basically had these loofahs over it, and it was brilliant. And I really liked all that growth. So this year we're going to try these rumbacante, which has, when they're small, they're like courgettes, but then when they grow bigger, you can use them like squash, like pumpkin, like a butternut squash, I think, you know, and pastas and things like that. So I'm trying that. So that's new, but you know, yeah, give it a whirl. They're up now. So yeah, they want to grow.
It's very cool. I'm looking forward to seeing how they go.
I know.
Me too.
I just wanted to quickly ask you, Jenny, about your fly trap. I loved that video.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's a bit mad. Yeah. I did that video specifically because I actually just recently had some council people round from all the Enviro Schools facilitators came round to my house to look at what a sustainable sort of suburban home and garden would look like all put together, because they teach the different elements of it, but, you know, seeing how it would all function together, I think, was quite interesting for them. So they came round and they were particularly interested in my fly trap because they thought the kids would be really interested in that and trying to make it, and sort of the science behind, like, why it works or how it works. Mm. And again, I got that off the internet, off YouTube videos, and that started really how a lot of my projects start, which is I think, oh, I need a thing. I look at what's available in the shops and I think, yeah, not impressed with that. There's either too much waste, it's too much cost, or, you know, it just seems like a really daft solution to a problem that isn't that much of a problem. And so the fly trap, you know, that I just thought, well, I've never really done metalwork before, but it's a bit like sewing. It's just the materials are a bit sharper, you know. So, yeah, it sort of worked out okay. So, yeah, I sort of figured out, got a few bits and pieces from the op shop and a couple of bits from Mitre 10 and Bunnings and things, and then just made the fly trap, and it works a treat. And then and a few experiments with the different baits to try and make that go. But again, you know, that's just, now it's just stuff out of my kitchen, which there's nothing toxic about that, and I can just put it on my compost heap. That's no problem. And the fly trap can be used again and again and again, and the flies are fed to my chickens and they get a good protein source. So it's win-win all the way around. So it's awesome.
It's the first time I'd ever seen one, and I was like, now that's something that I could definitely have over summer.
Yeah. No, it's really good. But yeah, you've got to, you know, I did a lot of research on that. You've got to be really into flies. I mean, it took me quite a while to find the right stuff. I actually, in the video description below, I've actually linked the videos that I found in the end that made, and the resources where I went, aha, that's what I'll do. And that's how to do it. Because, you know, if you start sort of searching fly trap, or, you know, fly catcher, or, you know, you have to sort of like really zoom in to try and find what you need. But a few evenings spent looking for fly traps and I got there.
And people can come and see your garden.
Yes,
which is
can.
What I forgot to say.
Yeah, this is a fairly new thing. Yeah, so that was sort of like, to start with, it was really just about could we figure out how to have a sort of sustainable life in suburbia, you know, because, you know, that's that's what we need to do. You know, it's not really, we can't have people racing off into the countryside and everybody living in the wilderness or setting up sort of lifestyle blocks. We just don't have that much wilderness. And if everybody did that, we wouldn't have any wilderness left. So we really need to figure out how to live sustainably in the built environment that we already have. So the first thing was like, could we do it and how would we do it and what would it look like? And we didn't really know. I mean, so it was all a bit of an experiment about how we could do this. And we found actually everything has been a lot cheaper than we imagined, and everything has been, easier. Once you change something, something else changes and something else changes. And so we've sort of, now we've got to this point where people, we had a lot of people peering through the gate and they're really interested in what are you doing? What's going on? And I had a lot of conversations with people, and then, and all these people said, how can I come around your garden? The council was interested in all this sort of stuff. So I saw Secret Gardens on Facebook or something, and I thought, oh, this is brilliant. This is sort of the next step. And I'd also about the same sort of time started the YouTube channel, because my daughter lives in Germany, and she was like, oh, Mom, you got to do videos so I can see what's going on and everything. So I'd started that at the same time. So it's now moved into this space where I'm sort of wanting to share what I'm doing and how I'm doing it and inviting other people to try it as well, really, and just follow along. And if there's a few things that you might be able to implement in your life, you know, well, join in the fun, really.
Love it.
Yeah. I so commend you on your YouTube because I am a voracious YouTube watcher of garden videos particular.
Yeah, me too.
And it's so nice to have a New Zealand garden to follow because all of the ones that I currently follow are all in the Northern Hemisphere.
I know.
So
that
it's so backwards for what I need.
Yeah. I found that too. And that was a bit of a learning curve, because all of the ones that I was following, they were either in the UK or France, or they were in America. And, you know, in America, it was like, how do you protect your crops from deer and bears? And, you know, I'm like, yeah, I don't really have that problem. And then in England, it was all sort of like frost and really short seasons and all of that sort of thing. So I started off following those sorts of models and quite quickly figured out that that I needed to change and adapt. So I have actually changed the way I do things over the last few years based on the fact that, you know, it's different than all the videos I was watching. So I had to figure some stuff out myself. But I think I'm sort of getting there now. The big problem was that I was sort of following a model where you had a season where you grew in that season, and then you had months and months where you weren't growing anything, and everybody put their, you know, their gardens to bed or something, you know. And so getting used to that idea that we grow all the way, all the year through, and actually the hardest time here is middle of summer. So having your ground covered and having plants in the ground, shading the soil in the middle of summer is really important if you want to keep your crops growing. Because the first year I did it, I had nothing in summer, and then I couldn't get anything to start because it was too hot and dry. That didn't work well at all. So I ended up having empty beds in summer. So now I've got the hang of it, I think. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Sorry, I was about to finish, but no, I've got one more.
I was just going to say, I had one more question. I was just going to say about how people can find you.
Well, I picked, we've got the name Cornwall Pocket Farm. My husband actually came up with that because we're near Cornwall Park.
Yeah.
And obviously we're originally from the UK, although we've been here 30 years now. So, we wanted to sort of try and get that idea across that we were a little tiny farm sort of surrounded by suburbia. So it just, we have these things in Auckland, I don't know if you have them down there, called pocket parks, where they're sort of like, they're little spaces reclaimed from the urban land just to sort of where people can sit in the cities and things like that. So we thought, well, pocket farm would be the right sort of thing. But the good thing about having that name, Cornwall Pocket Farm, is nobody else has it, which is great. So so if you go into YouTube, you can just search Cornwall Pocket Farm or Instagram Cornwall Pocket Farm. Basically, that name, you know, it's always available, which is quite useful. So no underscores necessary.
Perfect.
Perfect. And people can book to come and see you in your garden.
Through Secret Gardens. That's right. And again, Cornwall Pocket Farm, and you'll see us there, yeah.
Yeah. And are you planning on running any workshops this summer?
I'm sort of toying with it. The idea has come up, and the visitors that have come around so far have all expressed interest in how I designed the garden.
Yes.
So I'm thinking of running a sort of a designer pocket farm sort of workshop. So,
oh, yeah. Cool.
But it's still in the planning stages. So, but hopefully that will come up.
Oh.
That would be very, I can imagine how valuable that would be, because it's just the idea of starting something like what you've done can feel very daunting,
yeah.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
And even just being able to see someone else who's done it must be so helpful.
So helpful.
And there was a lot of thought process and a lot of process that went into that, and I just sort of did it piece by piece, but sort of looking back, I can now sort of see what I did and how it all came, how it all worked out, and I think, oh, actually, yes, I had to figure it out from scratch. It would be quite useful to be able to say to somebody, well, this is how you might do it, and you might be able to get the results you want. Yeah,
you could write the manual.
Oh, yes.
Maybe
you could run workshops purely on how to do spreadsheets like you've done.
Yeah.
I would be there.
Yeah.
Oh,
online.
Yeah, no problem. Well, maybe that's it. Excel for gardeners. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for talking to us.
Oh, no problem. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
So lovely. And everyone, so in the show notes will be linked Jenny's YouTube, the Cornwall Pocket Farm YouTube, and her Instagram and Secret Gardens. Of course, you know we love Secret Gardens. You can definitely should go and book if you are in Auckland or visiting Auckland. You should definitely go and book and see Jenny's garden. I know that if we go up to Auckland, we will definitely be booking. It has been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thank you so
thanks
much,
so
Jenny.
Much. I really enjoyed it. Thanks.
Oh, thank you so much. Bye, everyone.
Bye.